But on the line, I'm delighted to welcome to the Monday edition of Northside Today, Conor Faulkner from AA Ireland. Good morning, Conor. How are you?
Good morning, Donny. Hello.
Now, Conor, I am astounded and shocked at a recent survey carried out by the AA, which suggests that one in eight drivers admit to being distracted by children, inebriated friends and talkative spouses. Conor, how come it's not 7 out of 8 or even 8 out of 8? How come it's so low?
You would think, wouldn't you? I think this is a scenario we're all very, very familiar with as drivers. Families in cars, people chatting at the driver. And I guess the reason why we put this information out, Donny, is we want people to appreciate we're always giving road safety messages to the drivers of cars, legitimately. But if you're a passenger in a car, don't make the driver's job harder. Don't be yakking at them. Don't be distracting them. Don't be waving your phone at them. Appreciate that the driver sitting alongside you has to concentrate on what they're doing. And that's why we put it out there. Now, we live in a world full of distractions for drivers, and you know, sometimes it's inside the car, sometimes it's outside the car. But it's one source of distraction out on the road, which, you know, is within our control, if you like. And lots of people say, yeah, it drives them mad. Rows with spouses, having to shush kids in the back seat, talking to passengers sitting beside you. They can all make they can all break the driver's concentration. And really, when you have crashes and accidents in Ireland, driver concentration is usually what goes wrong. So anything we can do to stop that happening, sure, it's got to make things a little better.
And I would imagine as well, Conor, that we are coming into, and if we're not already in it, a time of the year when there are more people in cars at this time of the year, and I'm thinking of shopping and people that have to be brought hither, thither and yon, so that the likelihood is that there would be an increase. And of course, also, something that I would like to chat to you about in a minute is the increased volume of traffic on the road. So, I mean,
It's definitely true, Donny. Both things there are true. Firstly, yeah, it is a bit seasonal. When we get into the autumn, winter months, all of our towns and cities become much more congested. There are more people on the road. Everybody is working. There's nobody on holidays at this time of the year. The kids are back. The colleges are back. The retail environment's very busy. The weather deteriorates. So if you get a rotten, wet morning in Dublin City, for example, lots of people who might otherwise take the bike or take the bus will be in their cars. So traffic is always worse. And in a rotten winter weather scenario, you get more of those traffic jams caused by shunts and traffic incidents, etc. The whole thing gets messier. So it's the traffic season. And that, you know, does cause frustration and all of that thing. And then layered on top of that, seasonal effect, the economy is growing. Probably plenty of people out there will say that they're not feeling it, but, you know, the data doesn't lie. The economy is growing. You have more employment, more people at work, therefore more traffic on the roads. And the whole thing is getting busier. The M50 these days is over 130,000 vehicles per day average. That's higher than it was at the peak of the Tiger boom. So, yeah, busy country, busy times, and we're seeing it, amongst other things, in traffic congestion.
Yeah, and I can definitely vouch for that, Conor, because I was thinking about it last night, or actually this morning when I was sitting in the office, because I knew we were going to be chatting, and I just timed it yesterday. From my house to the office here, I did it yesterday in 12 minutes, and that was using the section of the M50 between Junction 5 and the M1 exit, if you know what I mean, out by the airport.
Yes.
The similar one this morning, it took me 44 minutes.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And that's winter in Dublin. And you know, one of the frustrating things for drivers is that you won't know from one day to the next how bad it's going to be. But this is definitely the very worst time of the year. I mean, you know, typically a wet Tuesday morning in November is when Dublin traffic's going to be at its very worst. And then, you know, as the year rolls around, when we're in July and August, we forgot what traffic is like. And then September comes along and catches us by surprise again every year. And that's the pattern of life in Dublin City. But it's getting busier as the city grows. There's more and more strain on our infrastructure. And people will remember 10, 12, 15 years ago, the conversation in Dublin was about how traffic was strangling the city and it was choking off the economy, and we got to do something about it. And here we are again, not having done enough about it in the intervening decade, and looking at some of the same challenges and some of the same mistakes that happened last time the economy roared.
Conor, am I right in thinking that we are in a situation where there is actually physically nothing we can do with the M50 because it cannot be widened any further? Now, I think, if memory serves me right, I'm almost certain that it was yourself I heard discussing it the last time when they widened it, that it should have been widened further at that stage, and we were told, oh, no, this is quite sufficient for our needs. Of course, we now see that it isn't. But we're going to have to find another alternative other than to go tinkering with the M50 again.
Entirely true. And then broader than just the M50 itself, you cannot ultimately cater for your transport needs by ploughing everything into roads and expecting either public transport using roads or the private car to answer all your needs for you. And you particularly cannot do that when your pattern of development continues to allow the city to spread outwards, to be low-rise, to expand itself into the surrounding counties and create additional transport demand for people coming into the city. So if all you're doing is roads, that is like trying to dig your way out of a hole. You'd be building the M50 forever. You'd have three decks on the damn thing and you'd still be talking about traffic jams. We've got to do something better than that. And the solution really, in a sense, it's not rocket science because other cities do it as well. You must build public transport infrastructure, metros, Lewis systems. We need a great deal more of them. This is not the only thing. You know, cycling provision, relatively simple thing to do in engineering terms, potentially be very helpful. But the big ticket items, build public transport. We have three Lewis lines in Dublin. We should have 12 or 14. We had opportunity to build them over the years, and we didn't. Ultimately, we will have to build them. There will probably be a Dublin Metro, a rail link to the airport. Those things are very, very important for the future growth of the city. And while infrastructure is in theory expensive, we have never built a piece of infrastructure that we subsequently regretted. Can you imagine what Dublin would be like without the M50? Can you imagine how strangled Dublin would be without the Port Tunnel? Is there anybody along the Lewis lines who isn't very, very glad that the system was built? Long term, those are going to be the only viable solutions. The city has to have public transport and better infrastructure than it does.
Well, Conor, there isn't a million years between us in age, and when you think about the length of time that we are waiting for the Lewis lines that we have, I think we'll be long, long gone. It won't be our problem by the time we hit 12 Lewis lines in Dublin. I can't understand the procurement system and the hoops that things have to go through in order to put in something which is required and basic engineering.
Absolutely. And every country has a tendency to complain and grumble about their own setup and look at others and say, why can't we do that? But if you look at the speed at which infrastructure is generated in countries like, not exotic countries far away, places like Portugal and Spain seem to be able to do it far, far faster than we do. There was a piece of footage going around the other day of a motorway tunnel being constructed in the Netherlands, and it only took them 4 or 5 days. And then if you look at the M50 in Dublin, 32 or 33 kilometres in length, and the amount of time we spent debating that and arguing it, the M50 over its life was built at an approximate speed of a kilometre per year, which is insane. It took us four times longer to build the M50 than it did for the Americans to go to the moon after they said they would do it. So, we have simply got to be faster than that in Ireland. There's lots that we do very well. It's a great, great country in many, many ways. It stands up in lots and lots of international comparators. We have other countries looking at us in admiration, wondering why we're so slick in things that we do in some areas. But in building infrastructure, no. We are pitifully, lamentably slow. And it really does hamper us, and it continues to hamper us in Dublin. And here we are, hampered again by the limitations of infrastructure because we didn't build as much as we should have done when we had the opportunity, and it's holding us back. Even now, the economy is, you know, touch wood, thriving again. The engine is starting to hum, but it's inhibited by lack of investment in those far-sighted things that other countries seem to do better than us.
Yeah, and of course, the other thing that has to be considered there, which would, I think, alleviate some of the problems in relation to Dublin, is if we could expand our industrial hubs are out of Dublin. And one thing which is, I think, would suggest militating against that is the fact that we have Cork and Limerick, the two biggest cities in Munster, and there still isn't a decent road joining the two of them up.
Yeah, and that is coming, to be fair. But if you, we did an awful lot in the roads. I mean, I was critical of saying that building roads, you can't just build roads, you'll never solve your problem. And that is true. But nevertheless, Ireland needed to build a lot of road. If you wind the clock back 25 or 30 years, you know, we had very, very pitiful standard of infrastructure. We started an enormous road building program, one of the biggest in Europe, very necessary, very worthwhile. And we built the motorway network, and it's terrific. But then the music stopped. With a shattering crash, we ran out of money 10 years ago, and everything had to stop. And the roads program was incomplete at that time. And there are still roads that urgently need to be built, notwithstanding my earlier comments. Things like, for example, that Cork to Limerick motorway, or high-grade dual carriageway, or certainly proper road connection between those two major cities, obviously has to be done. The N4 from Dublin to Sligo, from a point really where you enter into Connacht, from there all the way to Sligo, still a conspicuous gap on the network. Improvements on Cork to Waterford. You know, there are a few key things that still need to be done, and we should do them. But beyond that, there are other types of infrastructure that Ireland needs more. And that could be water infrastructure, waste management infrastructure, electricity generation, broadband, and certainly public transport in our cities. That is stuff that Ireland has not done well enough or fast enough compared to other countries. And you know, if we had made the same sort of progress on those infrastructure projects as we had done on roads over 25 or 30 years, it would be a very different place now. But, you know, that's spilt milk. There's no point in 2018 bemoaning what we could and should have done 15 or 20 years ago. We have to decide what we are going to do from now on. And it will need very substantial spend on infrastructure year on year for many years.
Conor, before I let you go on, I appreciate that you stepped out of an important meeting this morning to talk to me. One thing that I'd like to discuss with you, and I suppose I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of crystal ball gazing here for me. I'm going to mention the dreaded B word, as in Brexit. I would imagine, Conor, that there are a lot of cars being imported into this country at the moment from Britain and the north of Ireland because of the euro versus sterling rate. If it is a thing that Mrs. May cannot get this through Parliament, which at the moment the numbers are suggesting she is not going to get it through Parliament, although I have a feeling that common sense might prevail at the end of the day, but let us take the scenario that it doesn't, and Britain falls off this cliff on the 29th of March. Where then, for somebody who wants to import a vehicle from England, bearing in mind that the Great Britain and Northern Ireland will then be outside the EU?
Yes, complicated, isn't it? As everybody is observing. Look, a couple of things on that. We don't know the Brexit outcome. Theoretically, were a hard Brexit to occur, Ireland would then be free, if we chose to do so, to add an import duty on British cars, which would, you know, greatly diminish their attractiveness here. The British, in turn, would be free to erect trade barriers going in the other way. I don't know, to charge an exit tax on British cars being sold out of the jurisdiction, whatever they want to do. We would no longer have the common rule base. But just because, you know, in the first instance, I would imagine, even in the context of a hard Brexit, some sort of continuity legislation or enabling legislation would be required in the UK, which would say that the UK won't unilaterally change any of the current arrangements in the immediate term. What will happen longer term, Lord knows. It depends on the future trading relationship between the EU and the UK. I would imagine that Ireland will have to make a series of bilateral, pragmatic arrangements with the UK, and almost certainly these will be included in it. But even before the EU, there is predating international agreement on certain basic movements. For example, the recognition of each other's driving licenses, the recognition of each other's rights to take cars in and out of countries, etc. Those are governed by traffic conventions that go back to the 1920s and the 1940s, the Geneva traffic conventions are updated in the 60s as well. So that means your Irish driving licence will still be valid in the UK, your British driving licence will still be valid here. There will be no reason why you can't drive back and forth into the UK. The UK will have the right to impose a customs inspection on you, but that doesn't mean they will necessarily need to. So I would imagine, you know, get on your ferry to Holyhead the same as you ever did, drive back and forth to Belfast the same as you ever did. Where it becomes really complicated is if you want to export goods to Belfast or import goods from it, then it does become really complicated. And look, what those arrangements will be is literally in the lap of the gods. You would hope that some sort of sensible transitional arrangement will follow the 29th of March next year. But, you know, there's not one person, the Taoiseach, the European Union, the British Prime Minister, Britain itself, which is still busy arguing with itself and doesn't seem to have a clue what it actually wants to do. Nobody in all of these things can tell you with certainty what the legal situation will be come the 30th of March next year. We simply don't know. We simply don't know.
Well, Conor, it appears to me that the old adage is true here, that it is amazing how in such scarce supply, common sense is. Conor Faughton, AA Ireland, thank you so much for joining me this morning, Conor. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.